This is How to Business in Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corbett.
And we're back with part two of our conversation with Michael Wordley, talking about reality versus expectation when it comes to moving to market. If you missed part one, I highly recommend you go back and listen to that because one, there were some juicy details, and two, we last left off on Michael was telling us about why he picked New York or why New York spoke to him so loudly in his journey. As we dive into part two of this conversation, we dive more into the saving money aspect and we talk about prioritizing audition life and what that means to you. Again, I've said it before, the point of being a working actor is to make yourself one, not only indispensable, but two, keep showing up. Those are the people that keep working. And also in this conversation, we talk about moving to market. We break that down. What does that look like with your budget, your side hustle of your gig? Where are you going to live and how to, you know, function with roommates? So here's that conversation.
What did you think the expectation of being a working actor in New York City was going to be like, as opposed to now that you know however many years in the game of being in New York, mm-hmm. the reality? Mm-hmm. What was a hyped up dream version that you had in your head?
You know, I think we all think, oh, I'm going to move here and I'm going to win a Tony. Like, yeah. You know, I think we all think that we're just going to, you know, we're going to come here and just automatically book our first Broadway show.
Yeah.
It was a little bit different for me because I just didn't know that there were so many other things that you could do because I didn't go to school for it. So I didn't have someone telling me, you know, regional theater is amazing. You know, you could go do national tours. You could do TV and film. Like, you know, there were so many other things that I just did not know when I came here. I just knew of Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go even more in detail, commercial Broadway. So I think the reality for me was, yes, I'm going to move here and I'm going to audition and then hopefully book my first Broadway show. The reality was I moved here. I went to anybody who would see me because I was non-union. And I waited in lines for hours and hours and hours on top of trying to work and, you know, standing out in the cold, just trying to be seen to eventually booking my first off-Broadway gig and then booking a tour. And then when I started touring, I pretty much just went from tour to tour to tour.
And I want to talk about that here in a second. Balancing in this, okay, I don't know how to phrase this, but cutting your teeth at that time while being on the ground, as we say, what was that like balancing, again, having no prior knowledge of the reality of what it was going to take? What was balancing survival job and auditions like at that time for you?
I would set a goal of amount of money that I need to make a week in order to pay my rent. So I'll just make up a number. If I had to say $200 a week, I would then on money, because I mean, aging myself. Back in the day, we had to come. You had to come to Pearl or Ripley's Studios, and you had to do like an unofficial list. So you know, we would arrive at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and we would sign up. And I used to work in West Village. So I would tell my boss, like, "Hey, I'll be there at 8. I would then go to Pearl at like 5, maybe sometimes 4, and I would sign my name. I would then go to work. During my lunch break, I would then, usually at 12, I would come back to Rodeo Pearl and figure out where they were if equity had went through. Well, actually, no, first I would check if they were even accepting the unofficial list. Sometimes they didn't if there were too many equity members or EMC points. So yeah. And then after work, I would come back. So basically, I think to answer your question, my main job was to make money, because if I didn't have the money to be in New York City, then I couldn't stay in New York City. Right. So for me, I think everyone's journey is different. Some people come here with money. You know, some people don't. I did not come here with money. So I couldn't really focus too much on auditioning if I did not have my rent yet. Mm-hmm. So let me dive more into that. So if I know that I had 5 auditions, I would then choose which ones I was like, you know what? I am a perfect fit for these auditions. That audition's on Tuesday and Wednesday. Monday, Thursday, and Friday, I was working. I would call my other colleagues. I would say, hey, y'all, I need to work these days, and I need to take off these days. Could we switch? You know, let's make this happen. Luckily for me, I had a manager who was, they knew that I did move out here to become an actor. So that was like my first priority, but they also knew that I needed to make money. So yeah. I guess communication with them really helped me out a lot, because I would just tell them like, hey, I've read a big audition on this day, and this day. And they would just, you know, yeah, schedule me accordingly.
Before we press on, because I want to dive into moving to market, which is something that's so key, and I really want to help people out with this. But before we press on, what is the unofficial list for those who are non-union?
So the unofficial list is basically, you know, sound messed up, but some person will arrive first at Ripley Studio. So if you had auditioned for Wicked and it started at 12 o'clock, someone will then arrive at Ripley Studios and they will just get a sheet of paper and they will write down their name and usually their name, and usually a line would form outside. Now, mind you, the building is not even open yet. So this is just, it depends. Like, I mean, I've been at some where it was like maybe 200 people waiting outside. Wow. And we would just sign the list. And then when the building finally opened, we would then go into the building. We would go, you know, to 12th floor or whatever. And we would give, you know, the person in charge the list. And they would either say, okay, we're going to keep this list. Or sometimes, it all depends on who you had, they would start a brand new list. Hmm. So it didn't matter if you put your name on the list. They would literally just start a brand new list. So if you're waiting there for 4 hours, you just have to wait again. So the unofficial list is basically what it is, a unofficial list of non-union performers who are trying to get seen.
And to break that down further, just so you guys are aware and understand, when you're non-union, you do not have the luxury of having your spot held for you or just being able to walk in like last minute and then just sign your name. There are some people, like he just said, you have to wake up at the crack or else I'm gone. And auditions, there are two major time slots, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., depending on which one you're going to. It's mainly those 10 a.m. that really get people. And this is why it's so great to have a buddy system. And this is why it's so great to have friends who are like your ride or die, who will hold you accountable, who can, oh, hey, they started the line early, or the list is up, or hey, I know that you're off doing whatever. I'll hold us our spot in line until you know what I mean. And especially during audition season, at the beginning of the year, or pilot season, or whatever the case may be for the theater portion for people, it's real. I mean, there are some long nights of camping out, and the commitment level it will show. And, you know, I commend those who have done it. That was not my experience.
Ooh, so she blessed.
I was real blessed. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But like, I was real fortunate that I didn't have to experience that. So I commend those who like cutting their teeth, putting in those 10, like I consider that your 10, that's part of your 10,000 hours, if I'm honest. Putting in, and that shows showing up again and again and again and again, because eventually it will come. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about moving to market with the reality versus expectation. I break it down, and I break it down into four or five subparts. Moving to market. You, and please tag along and please add on to this if you have anything to add. When you move to market, you need to know, depending on whether it's LA, Vancouver, Toronto, Atlanta, New York, wherever you're going, you need to know where you're going to live. Are you going to live in the city or are you going to live out of the city? And if you're going to live in the city, okay, if you're not going to live by yourself, are you going to get a roommate? Let's start there first. What would you recommend in terms of a roommate situation? Some, because I've known to go 50-50 for some people, whether it be someone that you know, or whether it be someone who you just happen to be matched up with, so you're like two ships passing in the night. What do you think is some people's downfall when it comes to the roommate situation?
And this is for someone who is, this is their first time moving to New York City.
First time, yep.
I would recommend that they move in with someone who is also in the business. This is just my personal opinion, because of like scheduling. And also because sometimes if you are non-union, like you may have to do some lip trails in the bathroom, you know, sometimes in the morning. And if you have someone else who's in the business, like, yeah, they may get annoyed, but they understand like, okay, you know, this is hustle mode. Like, you know, this person has to do this. So I would recommend moving in with someone who is in the business. I moved in with someone who was in the business. But then actually I moved in my first New York City apartment. It was three of us, including myself. And one of the people just worked in the food and beverage industry, excuse me. And it was just easier, you know, because we all understood each other's schedules. We were all hustling, you know, trying to make it. So that's my opinion.
And if you, and I want to break that down further, because when it comes to the roommate situation, it is a 50-50 gamble. And if you're going to sublet, and I please hear this, if you're going to sublet, you have to be careful. Because for liability of insurance, not a lot of landlords allow subletting. So you have to be careful. Being said, when it does come to the roommate situation, a lot of people ask, well, how do I go about finding a roommate, or how do I go about finding a place? Now, they're not paying me to endorse them, but here are some things, or some websites that you can go. If you're on Facebook, and I think that they have their own alterations depending on what market you're in. Gypsy Housing for New York City. If you are looking for an unfurnished place, a place to start your own, you could check out Naked Apartments, Zillow, Street Easy. But your best recommendation that I always give people is if you know someone who already lives in that market, reach out to them. If you even if they're not in the business, reach out to them. Get their advice about, hey, what's the market looking like? Because the market is always changing as far as rent is concerned. And get their input as where are some good places to live, not live? Because this also ties in with how you then commute later. The second thing that before we get to it is when you move to New York City, something that you need to be mindful of is the hustle. And the hustle, meaning your side gig before you book a job. Now, here's the thing. Before Rona, the common jobs were either babysitting, the fitness industry, and or a restaurant, because those are somewhat lucrative and those allow you to come and go. However, going forward, of course, this world is going to look very different. But what I recommend to people is if you have an additional skill, if you have a higher education, use that. And if it is flexible, to let that be your side job. It might not be what you want, but it's what you need in the meantime. If you are someone who does a second language, use that to your benefit. If you have an additional trade that can be flexible, that allows you to have those mornings off or those afternoons to come and go, use that. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the other three that I listed before, but if you that's not your ministry, and if you know that's not what you want to do, use your higher education as a second resource of income. I promise you, it will not fail you.
No.
I mean, am I wrong?
Like, no, you're not. I mean, no. Yeah.
And I feel like lot of people, if you don't know, you don't know. And that's why I want to share this with people. Mm-hmm. Now, transitioning. The biggest thing that gets people in trouble. So we talked about moving to the market, what your side hustle is going to be until you're a proficient working actor that has a regular income. Your budget, which will be your saving grace, your ride or die. I highly recommend before you move to market, if you have the luxury, if you have the the means to do so, networking is so important when it comes into this. What is the current value of the market? Meaning, where am I going to live? How much is that going to cost me per month? Am I living by myself or am I living with a roommate? What are weekly and or monthly grocery bills going to look like? That is also important. Your continued training, either dance class, acting class, voice lessons, and then last but not least, transportation. Again, hence why I said, if depending on if you're living in or out of the city, that could be the MTA, that could be the bus, that could be a personal vehicle. I feel like budget, and please correct me if I'm wrong, budgeting is what gets a lot of us in trouble, is because we either, again, if you don't know, you don't know, but some of us don't have the foresight to then think of those things before we just drop right in. I mean, what was your experience like trying to navigate that at an early stage when you didn't have those resources to know in the beginning?
Well, I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier where I was, you know, as far as like me being in a city and me auditioning, my first thought was, okay, I need to have this amount of money by the end of the week. So I need to work. I need to budget. No, Michael, you can't go to this industry party right here because you need to have money in order to eat. So until you are able to do that, you have to focus. You have to budget, because most people, you know, that's one of the reasons why people can't survive the city, because they just don't have the money to. So they end up, you know, going home or, you know, now, mind you, the city is very expensive, but you did mention it. You know, you have like gypsy housing, but then you also have like, I want to say that there's a, I'm not sure if it's through gypsy housing, but I know that it's on Facebook where it's like $800 rooms or low. So if you're like, listen, I don't have money to, you know, have a balcony in New York City, like, humble yourself and get that $850 a room, you know, or $800 a room, and until you are able to do what you want to do.
Wait, you say have that again. Living within your means. Can you tap on that again?
Yeah,
if you don't have the money.
If you don't have the money, if you don't have the money, you must humble yourself and do what you have to do in order, so that way you can do what you want to do. You know what I mean? Like, listen, there is no shame in my game. You know, I moved to New York City with about $600 in my account. And definitely for the first week, I was on my cousin's couch. You know, I was sleeping on his couch because he was eventually about to leave to go do a cruise ship. But yeah, I was like on the couch and being like, what? How did I...
Yeah.
What is going on? Am I supposed to be here? But yeah, I was supposed to be there. And you know, I just had to say, Michael, you know, you're not there yet, but you are going to get there. You have what it takes to get there. You will get there. But this beginning stage is going to be, it's going to be hard. It is. And it was. I got some stories. It was hard.
I want to tack back on something that you mentioned earlier, tour life. How did, if I'm not mistaken, you've done Little Mermaid, Miss Saigon, and The Color Purple. How does tour life coincide with the reality of being in New York? Whether before you leave and or when you come back, what is that process like? Like, okay, now I know that I'm getting ready to leave. I have to find someone to sublet, or that I know that I'm coming back and I have to do the groundwork. Like, am I going to get a job again? Or am I going to have have a nest egg to like ease for a while? Can you talk about that?
Well, definitely when I left each time. So when I first left for Little Mermaid, I had to have somebody sublet my apartment. And then that lease actually ended during the actual tour. Mm-hmm. So when I went from Little Mermaid to Color Purple, I didn't have to find a sublet because that apartment was already gone. Mm-hmm. I will say this, you know, leaving to go on tour was stressful, just because, I mean, everything, I mean, you are now living on tour. So sometimes you may need to get a storage unit, depends on how much stuff you have. Because even if you do sublet your apartment, you know, no one wants to have your clothes everywhere. So if you have enough space in New York City, which you probably won't, you need to move your stuff. Or sometimes, like, you know, they may want to bring their stuff inside the space. So definitely just finding out, I guess, communication with the other person, like what exactly that they want to do. Mm-hmm. For me, I was able to leave my stuff in the room. I just put it, you know, underneath the bed and everything like that. So, and most of the stuff I actually took on tour. And also, side note, when you do go on tour, you get trunks. So, you know, I was able to have two trunks on my first tour, and one of the trunks was like just like my winter stuff, and then the other trunk was like, summer. You know, it was like summer stuff. Just because, I mean, the tour is a year, so you're going to experience all seasons. So yeah, definitely, like, leaving, I think, was a little bit more difficult. But coming back, you know, I mean, hopefully, if you do it right, when you come back, you got money. So, yeah. You know, it shouldn't be as stressful.
Yeah.
You know, some people just find an Airbnb or stay with a friend for however much time your rehearsals are.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if you would agree with this sentiment. I was very fortunate enough that because I had a good relationship with my landlords, when I would tell them, like, hey, I'm going out of town for a job, they said to me, and I quote, "We don't care. As long as we get our money and as long as you accept the contract, we're fine. And give us a copy."
I can't speak for all New York City landlords, but most of them, that's number one.
Yeah.
Listen, we don't care what body is in the room.
Yeah.
As long as when it comes to the first, we got that money.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, I have some friends who are very, very, you know, fortunate, and they don't even sublet their apartments when they leave. You know, they just pay for it. And like, the landlord doesn't care that no one's in there. Like, they just want their money.
Yeah.
Usually. That's not all New York City landlords, but most of them, you know.
Yeah. And isn't it funny how no one can afford to live in New York, but yet 8 million people do? Isn't that funny? I mean, come on now. You know I'm not lying. You know I'm not lying.
Like, and like, choose to.
Yeah.
We choose to live in New York City.
Who would put themselves through that agony?
We choose to live here.
God. Well, Michael, thank you. You know, as we get ready to wind down with our questions, thank you so much for this. And I feel as though this was a huge insight for someone who's getting ready to move and has a real understanding. Well, I mean, no, I mean, obviously not right now in 2021, or you might, I don't know, but having the reality that, again, because this is a business, you need to set yourself up. So you need to set yourself up for success and be given the full reality of what's about to come your way. Because I feel, as you just said, it's sometimes a pipe dream. Oh, I'm going to move to New York City and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Okay. Susan, calm down. That's all well and good. But we also need to think about longevity of the reality, being that it is, you know, the go, go, go. And I also want to ask you this before we wind down with our other questions. How do you, when it comes to scheduling, how do you balance, you know, between auditions and work and you time and just you time with your friends? Like, because I mean, that's also essentially a part of it. Like, make sure that you have a full life.
I know they can't see this, but I'm showing Corbin a calendar.
Yes.
I live by a calendar.
Live and die. Live and die.
If I don't have a calendar, I won't be on time.
Yeah.
I won't schedule. I literally have to schedule
same
me time on my calendar.
Yeah.
I am pro calendar.
Yeah.
If you want to make sure you have a balanced life, you either need to put it on your phone, your iPad, your computer, or write it down. I'm old school, so I have to write it down. I'm really old school because this is huge. But yeah, scheduling. That's how I balance everything. That's how I balance my life. Also, this is random and side note as well. Wake up early.
Yeah.
And I say that because if you wake up early, you have more time for me time. And then you're able to give out to everybody else because you already, you know, make sure that yourself was good. Calendar. That's my answer.
You know what's so funny? Whatchamacallit? In the words of the late Prince, he was in an interview on The View and he had sunglasses on. He goes, you know what? Rockstar hours don't start till noon. And this was like an early, like, I don't know, maybe 8 a.m. call for the show. And I was like, until you get to that Prince status, you do not have that luxury. Just get up, do the dang thing, get your day going.
Okay. you always start early. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ooh. So as we wind down with our last three questions, what would mature you say to younger you at the beginning of their career?
What would mature me?
Yeah, mature you now.
To younger me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You were. You currently are.
Ooh.
And you will be.
Come on now.
Always enough.
Yes.
Yes.
That's yes. What, yes.
You were, you currently are, and you will always be enough.
That's so good. That's so good. Professional and private, what does the future look like for you going forward?
I'm currently working on my first EP. I'm excited about that. You know, it's crazy. You know, it's scary. Yeah. You know, especially being musical theater, you know, we portray other people.
Yep.
You know, our main job is telling other people's stories. Yep. So, you know, when I first came across this project of doing my own thing and telling my own story, I'm like freaking the hell out. I can't even lie, you know. But I'm excited about it. I'm excited for people to see this other side that they have not, or I have not shown them. And then, you know, I'm optimistic. I do believe that this art form is gonna come back. Yeah. I do believe that we are gonna, I do believe that Broadway is going to open up again.
Right on.
I think it's gonna be different. But yeah. We do too good for it just not to exist anymore. So,
well, can you share something that you shared with me? We were talking about what had happened after the Spanish influenza, and you said the Roaring Twenties. Yeah. I had not thought about it until you said it to me. So, can you tell them again what you said to me about our Roaring Twenties?
I believe this is going to happen. Don't quote me, but this is what I believe is going to happen. You know, if you do your research and understand why the Roaring Twenties existed. It was because after the Spanish flu, people just wanted to get out. People wanted to, you know, go outside and go to shows and go see people and go to parties. And, you know, it was like the parties were on steroids because everyone was like locked in, you know, not doing anything for months. So I believe that once this is all settled, we're going to have our version of the Roaring Twenties, literally the Roaring Twenties in 2021. I'm excited about it. I mean, I pray I can see the day, and I hope we all can see the day soon. I believe that's what's gonna happen. Because people, I mean, even right now, you could tell me, hey, Michael, like, you know, the vaccine is working and everything's going back to black next week. The first thing I'm doing is I'm going to see a show.
Yeah.
That is the first thing I'm going to go do. I'm going to go see a Broadway show. As soon as it opens back up, I'm going to go see it because there's nothing like it. You know what I mean? Like, there's just nothing like going to see someone perform live.
Right on. Last question. Yep. Where can the people find you on social media?
You know, I'm not that good at social media, but I want to say that my handle is at mwordly. That's at mwordly. I'm just going to check that just to make sure.
Make sure that's accurate.
Yes, at mwordly. Carmen, I want to thank you so much for inviting me on to this. I was so nervous.
No, don't be. Like, listen, okay, truth or truth? Did it kill you? Are you still with the living?
No. Like, no, this was fine. This was fine. It was easy.
Well, yeah. And I feel as though, and I've had someone else say this to me, like, I don't know what I could offer. I said, you just offered it just here, because I know you and I have talked about this before off in private, but the reality as it pertains to being and living and thriving in such a booming metropolis city that New York City is, it takes a lot, and not everyone is aware. And that's something of substance that I know will help someone who's listening to this when this comes out. So thank you for sharing your time and your insight.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.